That's one of I love that. I love having that Tully,
Yeah, there's like
the jug. It's
Is it any
classic.
different than the actual Tully, or is
No,
it?
it's just a ceramic jug.
Oh,
I have one too.
okay.
When I get a bottle, I put it into the jug because I like the jug more.
Oh, okay. Well, so I guess I'm gonna keep this jug forever.
That's what I'm doing.
Good for you. Okay, but yeah, the
Yeah, so no, I
wedding,
was at a wedding
party bus.
and I got on my I was on the party bus, and so I sent this picture to you.
Oh
It was all
yeah.
like the plus ones of members of the part of the wedding party sitting on the party bus drinking while all of them were doing photos. So we
Oh.
got pretty wild.
Wait, so Erica was in the wedding party and you were just her plus one?
Yeah, and
Oh,
I was just her plus
gotcha.
one. But apparently, I'm now family with one of the former Nebraska volleyball players.
Did you know that over $5 trillion exchanges hands on a daily basis? That's an average of over $220 billion an hour. Now, how does this much money move every single day, and why does it move the way it does? Here on Drunkenomics, two bartenders who also happen to be students at the University of Nebraska Graduate School of Business are going to sit down and drink to the global economy and try and translate it into English. So sit back, relax, pour yourself a stiff one, and have a drink with us to the comedy that is the global economy.
Okay, everybody, and welcome back to Drunkenomics. This is the drinking podcast, or as some would say, the drinking presentation with an economics problem. So glad you could join us, whether it's your first time or your, I don't know, 80th time, or however many episodes we have. Either way, super happy that you're here and having a drink with us. This week, the VIX is at 1876, which, just so happens to be the year that Alexander Graham Bell filed for the, what was that? The
It's a
patent?
telephone patent, the first
Telephone patent?
telephone patent.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So talk about a good year to long Bell Communication stock. That would have been a great year, 1876, if you were around back then. But yeah, back to the VIX, because the VIX is at 1876. I'm welcoming us back as
Does
the
that
less
make
gracious
me
host.
the more gracious host
Yes, it
2 weeks
does.
in a row?
I know, this is 2 whole weeks, because we all know what happened last week on Monday. The market went sideways. Or when I say sideways, it really meant,
He means
I mean
down.
straight down. Yeah, congratulations, James Goldwater over there on the other side of this computer screen with a beer in his hand, is the more gracious host. And I, with my Irish whiskey in my hand, and the less gracious host. Welcome back.
I don't know if I like 2 weeks in a row.
You don't seem too comfortable in that position. I'm not gonna lie.
It's odd.
I know you
Yeah.
pretty well, and I can tell when you're a little bit uncomfortable, and right now is one of those moments where you're pretty uncomfortable,
You know
but
the worst part for me? The worst part was that all of September, so September's a long month this year,
I'll
and that we're
say.
getting like five, we're going to hit essentially 5 weeks of
Of a
market
down,
closes.
yeah, of down market closes,
And
yeah.
for the first 3 weeks, we had down market close, and then we had just barely
Barely broke
up
even.
this last week. And I'm like, dumb.
Dude, I told
Like,
you.
come
Last
on,
week I called
just.
it. It was last week I called it. It was gonna be a dead cat bounce. Remember that?
You did, and you were
I don't know if
right.
it made the air, because I don't know if I might have edited it. So I don't know. I mean, I edit the episodes, so I don't know if I edited it out or not. I actually haven't listened to last week's episode yet. But
To be fair, neither
I
have I,
know.
so it's not like.
Okay, cool. All right. I mean, I usually listen to all of them before the
I
following
was
week's
busy
episode,
doing
but
wedding stuff, man.
yeah, exactly. I was busy reminding myself to wake Billy Joe Armstrong up on Thursday or
Yeah,
Friday.
no, it's
So,
weird that for me, what's weird
right.
is that of all the things that have happened in the last week, because it's huge, the number of things that have occurred, that people are
Really.
still sitting here going, oh yeah, things are, there's a reason to buy. Like the 3 weeks that where the markets were
So.
trending down made sense because it's like, okay, people are getting, it's a correction. People are correcting out. It's a slow decline. That's
Yeah.
not inherently bad.
Well, remember last week when I made that bet saying the markets are going to close above, or by 10 a.m.,
They'll
it's
have
going to be
bounced,
above
yeah.
43.57, right? And it was because I knew there was going to be a dead cat bounce,
Yeah, and it was, well, to
and
be fair, last Monday there was a, it was a pretty precipitous drop.
that's
So
what
people were
led
going to
me
buy
to,
back. It wasn't that slow decline. It was an actual like fall.
And I just think there's
But
just too much liquidity. Like, we said a million times over and over and over again, there's too much liquidity in the markets. Not to mention gas prices are going up like crazy. It just closed over $75 today for the first time
Oil,
in
yeah.
God knows how long, right?
Well, it makes sense if we remember that Louisiana's been shracked by a hurricane, then
Yes.
Texas got shracked by another hurricane.
One
And so you
there.
have a lot of pipelines that run through there that originate there. You have a lot of the oil coming in from the Gulf to ports there that were delayed
Yep.
or disrupted. You have, on top of that, I mean, if you look at like the Port of Long Beach with all its like ships just waiting to come in to unload, if there aren't enough people to move the supplies from where it's sourced to where it's going or to its refinery and then its pipeline,
Then
well,
it's
yeah, gas prices are going to go up, oil prices are going to go up.
But I this kind of makes me wonder, With all that's going on in the UK with their energy crisis, I mean, have you been?
Oh my God! All of Europe. It's not just the UK, but the UK.
It seems like it's hitting the UK the hardest.
Well, the UK, as you'll recall, voted for Brexit. So this is really like everything that they were like all the things they were warned like this could go very wrong and it will be very bad for you when it does is now coming home. It's watching someone who like
this is one of those things, right?
You watch someone playing with fire and you said, you're going to burn yourself. And now they burnt themselves. And it's like, well, what did I tell you?
I mean,
you know, I'm pretty sure I told you so.
Yeah, I mean, you can argue that they were told so, but I don't think it really matters when it comes to politics because you can say whatever you want. I mean, not just in the UK. I'm not trying to single them out.
Yeah, I was going to say it's pretty universal that politicians are usually pretty divorced from reality. Yeah.
So, you know, just to breeze over that little subject with the whole energy crisis in Europe, I thought it was more specific to the UK.
The UK's problem is that they don't have enough truck drivers.
Theoretically, there's enough. Yeah,
so they can't get it to gas stations. Remember when the Colonial Pipeline was down and so people were out buying all the gas and thus they created a gas shortage?
No, I don't remember that. I think we had some guy on our episode.
I thought we talked about it. Talked about it for at least a few minutes.
I might have had four too many drinks to remember, but whatever.
So this time around, it's like the pipeline is broken again, except instead of a pipeline, it's just there's no trucks.
Right. So whether it's one form of transportation to another, I don't want to say halted, but it's at least slowed down drastically. Not a good sign. Yeah,
it's creating a shortage in a meaningful way.
Yeah, and consequently, you know, this is based off of BBC data from about a week ago. Oil and I think just energy prices in general in the UK are up about 70% in the month of August. Mm-hmm. Also, energy providers in the UK are regulated. I mean, they're regulated, I think, in the US too, as to how much they can charge per month on their utility services and things like that. But because of their regulations, because they can't break even because the government is saying, hey, you can't charge more than this. A lot of them have gone out of business.
Well, they find themselves in a position where they aren't able to pay. Like, they can't get the money to hire the people to do the job because the pool is still so small and everyone's constrained by.
Yeah, but that also means that, like, a lot of people can't get the energy that they need to keep their houses warm going into the winter. Last winter was a struggle for the UK. You know, I think even for all of Europe, rest of Europe is going to be
based on what I'm reading. It's really not even just Europe. It's also China's having problems.
Oh,
with
energy, of course. Yeah.
Which is weird. Yeah. It shouldn't be. In both cases, it's kind of Europe. It's a little different. For Europe, it's a confluence of factors that are the U.S. is unable to export liquid natural gas to them in a consistent way because Louisiana was hit, and that's where we'd be shipping a lot from.
We're
having issues.
Wasn't there a pipeline that Germany and Ukraine and I think another country decided to shut down or something like that? They voted to shut down access to this is a pipeline from Russia or something like that.
Yeah, so Russia provides a lot of the natural gas.
And Russia cut their exports down by about
20%.
It's down to one fifth. So it's down 80%. It's down to 20%.
So what had happened is there were a lot of bets on Europe had started looking at a position where they said they didn't want to be dependent on Russia for heat in the winter, essentially, and for power.
Yeah,
and so they started buying a lot of their natural gas from the United States.
Yeah, but they're rationale
we were able to provide.
Yeah, exactly. And I think a lot of it was just some geopolitical thing. I don't know. If you really want to call it diplomacy, we can chalk it up as diplomacy and just kind of wash our hands like Pontius Pilate and walk away. But I think a lot of it, too, was they wanted to be less dependent on fossil fuels and quote-unquote dirty energy. And because, you know, they have like windmills and all that kind of stuff in the North Sea. I think they're trying to expand their nuclear energy capabilities and all that kind of stuff.
Well, so that's funny because that's actually not the direction they're going. That's what I would have thought.
Naturally,
you'd think that the UK maybe.
I don't know. I could be wrong. I mean, but we have some friends in the UK that can hopefully, you know, kind of straighten me out on this.
So after the Fukushima disaster or the incident in Japan, Germany said they're going to stop relying on nuclear power. There's just a perception that it's dangerous in my response to
Germany. Germany said that because of what happened in Fukushima.
Yeah. Like and I feel like someone
that was so long ago. I mean, that was
but they said they're going to, but it takes a while to move to build infrastructure, move off a power source.
Fair.
But I feel like someone needs to point out to Germany, you don't have, to my knowledge, you don't have a whole lot of earthquakes, and you definitely don't have tsunamis. So
yeah.
You're going to be fine.
I don't know. Maybe Angela Merkel thinks that they do have earthquakes and tsunamis.
I think it's actually just a response to public pressure. The public,
right. Obviously, everybody wants their own government in the world to be more clean and all that kind of stuff, which, you know, this is kind of our way of slowly moving into China because their energy is obviously not very clean.
No, they're coal. You know, they're a huge amount of thermal coal.
A lot of pollution in China. They were wearing masks before the pandemic. That's how bad the pollution is over there.
You know, pros and cons, you know.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, so the Chinese dependence on coal, specifically Australian coal for power.
Yeah.
This is where, when I say Europe
funny
is
you
kind
say.
Of, yeah. Which they remember stopped importing last December. So they're about to go into winter. We're starting to see freezing temperatures in northern China.
Yeah.
And China's just flat out saying at this point, they have started, it is September, and they have started saying we are regulating power. There are power restraint concerns. Some cities are turning off streetlights. Yeah. They're shutting down industry. They're shutting down aluminum. They're restricting the amount of power aluminum production can draw.
So
what's their
objective behind this? Like, I mean, what exactly are they trying to do? All I see is that they're trying to stop producing this stuff. They're restricting textiles.
I have no idea. The only conclusion I can come to is that they're trying to hurt Australia economically, but they haven't.
Uh-huh.
So in what they've done, which is to say, essentially they've stopped buying iron from Australia and they've stopped buying coal from Australia, but coal is still up. A huge amount. It was up 90% or something.
I mean, year to date, recently, not really.
But if you think about,
absolutely. It's
but crazy. Remember, this all started about in November, December of last year. So this year alone, coal's up 90%. Now, why is that?
I think it's actually more than 90%, but
it is. I think it is.
It's 110%.
Well, it's because when we look at coal, there's two kinds of coal. There's thermal coal, which is coal for power production.
Right.
And there's coking coal, which is coal for steel production.
Right.
And what's happened is we've seen both these coals shoot up in value. And why? Well, China consumes 54% of the world's coal, something like that. And so with China now turning and sourcing from everywhere else, and not from Australia, what they've done is they've driven the global price up. And so Australia is sitting here going,
I don't understand how that works. So so there's excess supply of coal or whatever it is. Why does coal go up? Does it go up because China says, hey, we're on schedule to stop importing so much coal? Because of that, a lot of coal producers decide to slow down coal production. And is that why coal prices are going up?
It's actually what's happened is China's still dependent on coal reactors. They're trying to move to different energy sources, but it's going to take a long time before they're there.
Well, but for some reason, they also don't want to do business with the Western developed world. So countries like Australia.
Right. So they still need the coal, but they've said we won't buy it from Australia. So now they have to go and try and piece it together from smaller coal suppliers.
Okay, that makes a lot of sense.
Driving up the global price of coal because other people who were buying from them are now having to compete.
But that's almost manipulative.
It's manipulation.
It's manipulative.
It's a refusal to buy from one person and thus affecting the global price. But that's fine because the Australians have now turned around and gone, all right, we'll sell to everyone else at a new, better price than we were getting from China.
Yeah, so China really did Australia a favor.
Sort of.
I mean,
so it hurt iron,
right?
But it really, really was beneficial to coal.
It's so weird, though. I mean, and all I'm seeing is just they're shutting down steel mills, aluminum, that's hard to say after a few jams of Irish whiskey, aluminum manufacturing and power sector may be suffering, there you go, in lack of thermal coal. So this seems a little more self-inflicted than what's going on in Europe.
It is absolutely self-inflicted.
Yeah.
It's some of Europe is self-inflicted, but it's also Russia's cut production and cut exports, and the United States isn't able to fill that gap as easily right now because of weather.
Right.
But China's very much just gone, essentially you're sitting at a table, there is food at the table, and someone sitting there is going, oh, I don't want what's in front of me or what's available. I get ready to drink, guys, because here comes the analogy.
Yeah. I got my glass in my hand right here. Okay, so go ahead, whenever you're ready.
It's like you've gone to a restaurant and you've gone to McDonald's and you're asking for a Whopper. Right? Like you can.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I don't know. I'd rather just, when I go to McDonald's, I like to get a double-double.
See, I feel your pain.
Yeah.
I feel your pain.
No, got
that
double-double's what they make at In-N-Out, which is the best fast food restaurant in the world, I think, in my opinion. But
it's just like going and being, and someone being like, oh, do you, or like going to a sushi restaurant and then being like, oh, here's a spicy tuna roll. And they're like, oh, I want the spicy tuna roll from a different sushi restaurant.
Whereas in Europe, it's like, I want an old fashioned with rye whiskey. And it's like, well, you're going to have to wait a month because that's our next shipment of rye. So, you know,
because the rye isn't here yet, isn't available. Whereas Chinese are sitting at the bar asking for their rye whiskey old fashioned. And when you offer them any of your ryes, they're going, no, I don't want that one.
I want High West. Why do you guys not have High West? And it's like, well, we also have like Angel's Envy and Dickel
and Pendleton and Templeton
and Alberta, but I want High West. Why do you guys not have it?
I don't have High West.
I mean, this is a lot of great rice here. Let's pick, you know.
And that's what they've done.
Great analogy. I like that a lot. That was worth the drink.
Yeah, that's what they've decided. They've decided that they want, no, not that one.
But yeah, no, that's fair enough. I mean, like, you know, the walls are closing in both continents. I'm sure Europe's going to be okay. I'm sure they'll figure out a way. And I know the U.S. is not going to let them turn the lights off. Like, their friends are going to be too nice to the European Union.
No, I think what'll happen is eventually, so the U.K. to solve its problem, because there's a transportation problem, not necessarily a supply problem.
Yeah.
I was reading that the U.K. government has issued emergency visas.
But it's
also
a supply issue, too, because they're not getting as much coming in. So you're right. They're not getting as much coming in, but it's also a lot of their rigs they were supposed to go through maintenance procedures during COVID, but they didn't do it because it was in the middle of a global pandemic. So, you know, a lot of these oil rigs are still kind of struggling. They're still trying to figure out whether or not how much they want to rely on clean, quote unquote, energy. And also there's not that much wind, which granted that really accounts for a very small portion of.
Yeah. I've seen that there's a claim that it's underperformance of green energy and I don't necessarily want to speak to that.
It's too small of a factor anyways.
It is.
What they're saying is true about that. It's too small of a factor.
It's not enough. Yeah. It's the problem in the UK specifically is that they have the finished product. If you can guarantee your supply chain, the only thing that changes when you have a shortage is price. That's what'll happen. It gets more expensive. Consumption should go down. Demand goes down, right? That's how. Remember those two lines, supply and demand. If supply goes down, the price goes up if demand is unchanged. Usually demand will slide left with it.
They coexist pretty naturally.
But
they
problem
their equilibrium, their new equilibrium.
Their new equilibrium point. But the problem in the UK right now, the main problem is that the supply chain is disrupted in that they can't get the fuel from where it's being stored to where it's being sold. So that's a big problem right now.
Yeah,
the supply problem. Well, that may become more problematic later, but it may also be solved.
Yeah, and like I said, I think they're going to be fine. I don't think it's going to be inexpensive, for lack of a better term, to buy energy, any sort of energy product out in the UK anytime soon. But I think overall, like, the US is not going to let the UK have energy.
The US will not let them freeze. The US businesses will export fuel and oil to all of Europe.
That sounds a little bit more extreme. I think they're going to step in sooner than not letting them freeze.
I hear what you're saying. I simply mean in winter, the power will be on.
Yeah. It might be expensive, and the government the UK might need to pony up some money and maybe help us fix our debt ceiling crisis.
That problem will be hitting a little sooner.
Yeah, so I don't know. I feel like that was a pretty cool transition. I've made some really awkward transitions, but was that not a good transition?
So have I. No, it was great.
Thank you.
It was great into
the dead.
Oh, man.
Yeah. Are you going to be okay for this, or do you need another shot of whiskey or something like that
I'm going to have to go get another drink because this is going to be...
Okay.
I'll be right back. I can see the bar cart. This is just going to be rough.
Yeah, you know what? I'm going to go grab another drink too, so... Don't judge yourself, James.
Not judging, just saying.
Oh, I know that sound. Wine, huh?
Absolutely not. No, it is my single malt Isla.
Oh,
I'm going to do something with a little bit of bite to get me through
this next
topic. Ceiling and government shutdown.
Oh, man. Well, I'm still sticking with the whole Tully Dew from this.
I do love a Tully.
I love this packaging.
From the whiskey jug. I do, too.
It's amazing.
It's my favorite thing. I just love that whiskey jug.
Yeah. It's packaged a lot. Kind of like it's packaged kind of like U.S. debt, you know. It's packaged in lots of I don't even know how bonds are traded. That's how little I know about trading bonds. But they're priced in hundreds, right? So the quote for bonds
they're usually bought and sold in bundles, substantial bundles.
Yeah, I forget the bundle amount, but I know the quote for bonds is in hundreds. So if you see a bond that's quoted at $99, then that means it's trading at discount. And if it's like at $104, then that means it's trading at a premium. Bringing this to U.S. bonds, I wanted to start this discussion by talking about the 10-year, which reached a whopping 150.
Really?
Man. Yeah.
I saw that. Which is funny because I saw that on almost everything short term, yield is up. Which is what I was seeing. Yeah. So as we remember, guys, when yield's up, prices are down. Yep. Which means that people don't want to buy it because they don't know if it'll be good when they go to collect in October.
Yeah, exactly. So and why do prices go down? Because there's no demand. So it's kind of like a stock. If you buy Apple at 150 and you're like, man, this stock sucks, I want to sell it. You know, in the market, there's more participating sellers than buyers. And guess what? You're probably going to get less than what you paid for it. Kind of like a bond.
Yeah.
Usually the yield to price ratio is weird for bonds. Like, you know, the lower the price is, the higher the yield is. So if you see the yield crosses above 150, that means it's getting, the bond's getting cheaper.
Yeah.
So
no, it's, we're starting to see.
Ooh, the Isla? Yeah. The Isla?
It was a little warmer than the ice cube, but I wanted the ice cube to get it.
Oh,
just,
so it's got to settle. It's got to settle in.
Absolutely. Yeah. But it's settled whiskey, now.
Yeah.
It's finally chilled. It's finally chilled.
Good on you. Unlike Mitch McConnell. Yeah.
No, absolutely not.
No, not like Mitch McConnell.
That snapping turtle.
Yeah.
I know it'll damage your suspension, but I'd probably be okay with a.
Yeah. So basically what we're referring to, in case you're wondering, is U.S. debt is becoming, I mean, I think the way the bonds trade, the bonds really didn't move that much today. They just started a lot higher.
Yeah.
But they really didn't move much in the grand scheme of things.
For me, I think the 30th will kind of be that. So September 30, so that's what?
Yeah, Thursday? So it's this coming Thursday. And is that the deadline for when, I mean, because I know the other infrastructure bill, not the bipartisan one, which I have my questions about whether or not it can actually be called a bipartisan bill. But regardless, the other bill, Is it the reconciliation bill that's Thursday, or is it not? Because it's another $3.5 trillion.
It's the $3.5 trillion infrastructure bill that'll be voted on in the Senate.
That rings a bell.
But we'll see. It's just the infrastructure bill vote, so we'll see how they play out. But they'll be voted on the 30th, and that's kind of when we'll see it. Because one, the 30th is the last day of September. It should come out on the 30th, so you should be hearing about this on the day. But on the 1st of October, right?
Well,
we pay the DOD, we pay our Social Security checks, we pay.
Yeah.
I think there's
a lot of bonds that are maturing too. I don't know if it's on Friday or if it's sometime next week.
As I read the Moody's report, they say October 20th.
That might be it. Because I know the fiscal cycle is up
It's the day that we run out of the extraordinary measures run out.
Yeah. And I know the fiscal cycle runs out in about 10 days, I think, from today. And today is Monday, September 27th. So, I mean, you know, eyeballing next Wednesday, I think.
Yeah, here's the other thing. So what are the other parts of this bill? So there's the infrastructure bill that's being voted on the 30th. There was also today, supposed to be a vote on a government funding and debt ceiling raise bill. Mm-hmm. That's what did not go.
Was that the one that was voted on
today, the 27th, and the Republicans blocked
it. Yeah, so
all 50 Republican senators voted against the House approved legislation.
Yep.
That was supposed to suspend the debt ceiling through December of 2022 and fund the government through December 3rd, which means that as of October 1st, the U.S. federal government is shut down.
Yeah. Well, hold on. So let's back up before. I mean, that was a great rundown, and I really appreciate you doing that.
Yeah.
And I hate to get us way off topic, but let's back up to how we got ourselves into this little predicament in the first place, in case people didn't listen to our actual debt ceiling episode from, I think, 2 months ago or whatever it was. So this is back in August 2019. The debt ceiling was suspended.
Yes.
Remember who was president back then? Different president. So it was suspended back then.
And normally
when debt ceiling suspensions happen, or whenever Congress decides to raise a debt limit, I mean, it's usually a bipartisan thing, and it usually just, all right, done, right?
Here's what I will point out. When there is a Democratic president, the Republicans tend to become very concerned with the debt. And so that's why we had 2011, 2013, and now I think we're having this.
Right.
When there is a Republican president, Democrats tend to look at reality and are willing to raise the debt ceiling. Yeah.
And this is kind of the same movie as we saw. I don't want to say 2013.
Absolutely.
I don't really know what happened in 2013, but 2011.
In 2011, it was a decade ago.
Yeah, it's the same exact movie.
In fact, if you look at the House and the Senate, it's the same. It's almost the exact same cast.
Yeah, it's funny how, like, you know, as soon as you get in, wow, you have a pretty long tenure. But so 2019, debt ceiling got suspended.
For 2 years.
The deadline was set for 2 years back in August. And then, of course, 2020 happened. We got sideswiped. We had to spend a lot of money.
Absolutely.
But we also knew that, like, hey, inflation could be a thing in 2021, which we're starting to see glimpses of that. Whether it's transitory or not, you know, I'm not here to play judge or jury or Jerome Powell on that subject. But, you know, we knew. We saw this coming. But the question is actually, did we see it coming when we suspended the debt ceiling?
I don't think so.
I don't think so either. Because I don't think we knew that COVID was going to take over the entire world the way it did.
I don't think there was a specific cause being seen by people, but I do think that people were looking at economic factors and were saying, something's not right. We need to kind of unshackle the fiscal arm of the U.S. government to be ready because something's wrong in the economy.
Yeah,
and we don't think monetary policy is going to be all it takes to correct it.
Yeah, and I don't know if because not long after the debt ceiling got suspended in 2019, there was the whole the overnight repo crisis that happened. Remember that?
Yep.
So,
oh yeah,
obviously the government. It's very, very, I mean, it's like Evergrande when it comes to managing their debt. So maybe even worse, I don't know. But we have more resources to kind of come out of
it. Yeah, theoretically, the government also theoretically it's less of a problem when a government does that than when a company does.
Yeah, it's a little bit different if the debt to GDP ratio is 120% versus a company's quick ratio is 120%. That's concerning. Anyways, so that happened. It was suspended, and it was suspended for 2 years. This was agreed upon way back in 2019. Mm-hmm. And then here we go. 2 months ago, end of August, the debt ceiling suspension ended, which meant that the debt ceiling was back in place.
Was established at what the debt was.
Back in 2019.
No. The way a debt ceiling suspension works is that when the suspension ends, the debt ceiling moves to whatever it is on that day. So we do know
the debt goes there. The debt is still there.
And the debt ceiling rises to whatever it is.
Oh, it does? I thought the ceiling doesn't. Oh, wow. The
ceiling has to move. So,
the ceiling went up by $5 trillion because we spent $5 trillion from the time it got suspended till when it got
so the $7 trillion in debt that's essentially been amassed in the last 4 years, 5 years. Yeah. $2 trillion of that was pre-debt ceiling, and the $5 trillion since debt ceiling. When debt ceiling was suspended, it didn't matter. Debt can go up. When debt ceiling came back, it was like a lid on top of where the debt was on that day.
Yeah. And I think, so I guess the big wolf cry here is the U.S. government going to default on their loans? Are they going to be able to make their payments? And I guess are we going to shut down?
So, there's those three questions, essentially.
Yeah.
The first one is, essentially, if without a plan and a bill from the legislature to the president to fund the government past September 30th, the government will shut down on Friday. The U.S. federal government will shut down on Friday.
So real quick, just to clear the water here, what do you mean by fund the government? Does that mean raising taxes?
No.
Being able to issue new debt?
Let me start with what the debt ceiling actually is, because I think that'll answer kind of a few of the questions. So the debt ceiling is essentially, it is the total amount of debt that the federal government is allowed legally to issue, right, in order to pay for our bills. So in order to pay for operations, the debt ceiling just says the United States may have no more than $28 trillion of debt. If we raised it to $29 trillion, it's essentially the U.S. government may not have more than $29 trillion.
So we can issue another $1 trillion
of debt if we have gap.
So,
or if they totally suspend it or remove the debt ceiling, it becomes the United States government has no limit
on debt
to fund, right? So obviously you go to deficit spending and debt spending when you don't have enough tax receipts. So obviously there's a problem. You have to do something about that.
Yeah.
So when I say to fund the government requires money to run. The purse strings are held by Congress. It's one of their one of their main constitutional jobs is to control the purse strings.
Yeah.
And when I say the government requires funding, I mean you have every federal employee needs to be paid.
Yeah.
Social Security needs to be paid.
They need to raise money to pay for that.
Well, they don't need to raise money. They just need to say that they're going to spend it. Like the government needs to essentially say,
if they say they're going to spend it, then Congress will be like, you know what? Let's take a look and see if this makes sense. And if it does, then boom, they lift the debt ceiling to whatever it needs to be based on the budget.
So these are two separate issues. So the debt ceiling versus the government operations are two separate issues.
I know, but
so the government operations is just the Congress going, we need to pay for what we're doing, right? So we need to pay our employees. We need to pay.
Right.
We need to essentially give the money to the FBI so that it could go do its job.
Yeah, I understand. So what I'm trying to say is Congress, they approve of the spending plan, which then again, influences what happens with the debt ceiling.
Absolutely.
So they take a look at, the spending plan saying we're going to spend this much on FBI, military, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. You know, this is how much it might cost. And they approve it. And if it approves, then boom, the debt ceiling goes up.
Yes.
So
that's one of the great things about the way the budget system works in the U.S. is that when a budget is passed, it raises the debt ceiling automatically by the amount that isn't already being paid for, because essentially the premise here is that you can't agree to spend money without raising debt ceiling to pay for it if you need to use debt spending.
Exactly. And I didn't know that the debt ceiling, like, I didn't know that once the suspension ends, that the debt ceiling actually goes up to what it currently is. So whatever.
It's not like when they suspended it and then spent all that money and drove the debt up, then suddenly when the debt ceiling came back, they were like, oh yeah, we're also $5 trillion in debt beyond the ceiling, because that doesn't wouldn't work. That would have been devastating.
Yeah. So
to put it mildly.
Yeah. So, you know, a lot of you might be wondering, what would where does the government get this money from if the debt ceiling is suspended and they finance $5 trillion of operations to get everybody through COVID and all that kind of stuff? Where do they get the money from?
Well, it's bonds. So all the debt, all that debt is just from the issuance of script.
Usually.
Bonds. No, that's it. That's really the only method. The government has two income sources, really. Taxes and bonds.
But they also have the Treasury that can...
Well, the Treasury issues bonds.
I know, but I'm just saying, like, with the whole Fed Reserve printer thing, like, they printed a ton of money.
Well, so, that's a monetary issue. It's not a fiscal issue.
But part of what financed the whole $5 trillion thing, I mean, wasn't the Federal Reserve and them printing all this money, didn't that kind of help finance the $5 trillion plan that got us all through COVID?
So the Federal Reserve did one thing, which was to say they lowered interest rates to basically zero.
Yep.
They created a whole lot of loaning windows. They started buying and selling things through different organizations and banks and became a loaner of last resort before last.
Yeah.
So that really has nothing to do with U.S. debt. That's a totally separate chunk.
Oh, okay. That's more of just an inflationary thing.
Yeah, that's the Federal Reserve's balance sheet. Which is totally divorced from U.S. national debt.
But that's another topic too.
Absolutely, it is.
Oh my God.
But the U.S. national debt, if we look at that $28 trillion, that $7 trillion in the last, well, that $5 trillion in the last
2 years.
But it's really the last year and a half.
Yeah,
what that was the federal government just sitting there and saying, issue debt to get the money and then spend it. So the Great Depression in 2008, 2020, you saw the government step in and start doing things. So in 2008, the big one was there was all these infrastructure bills to build highways, to build roads, to fix and maintain sidewalks, stuff that had to be done that would cost money and that in doing so would theoretically create jobs.
Theoretically, yeah.
Right, because
they do. I mean, it's not really theoretical. They actually do create jobs, but it's a lot of it's just contract work. So
yeah, but then the premise is that it creates, it puts money into the system from the government.
Yeah.
And that adds to the velocity of money. And then there's more money out there. So it's being spent in multiple places. So you might create one job, but the fall on effects would be that you create five or six more from people servicing the contract that you've
issued. You get paid. So now you want to go get a haircut. Now you want to go get a haircut. And now barber gets paid.
And now the barber gets paid. Yeah.
And then the barber needs to buy ice cream for their kid. So now, you know, some dairy store.
So now the dairy guy gets paid.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, so that's what that is. And, you know, that money, that $5 trillion, that's what they did. Remember, a whole lot of this was you have interest-free COVID loans to small businesses, medium businesses, and for some reason, large businesses who had other options. But boy, did they take a lot of money, which kind of upsets me. I say kind of, I mean, it upsets me.
It upsets me too, but
Then you also have the every stimulus payment to citizens.
Yeah.
You have,
which costs, I mean, that was trillions of dollars.
Yeah, so that's the
unemployment, which is a federal thing too.
Oh yeah, the unemployment.
That was
right?
That cost a lot of money. That was a lot of, money was sent out.
Yeah, but it was absolutely.
Yeah, but I mean,
$2 trillion of that was just stimulus and things meant to keep things from getting worse.
Yeah.
Right. So that was.
Yeah. And no one argued against what, I mean, maybe there was a little bit of argument.
Well,
let's look past that.
What I'll say is there were quite a few Republicans who voted against it. And then when it passed, despite them, they turned around and said, look what we got for our states. And it's like, it was disingenuous at best.
Anyways, now we're facing the situation where we might default because we have so much debt. And apparently the government doesn't have that much cash.
Well, we've reached the ceiling.
Yeah. And normally what we would do is we would issue more debt to pay off old debt that's coming due.
Absolutely.
But we can't really do that right now because...
Well, we've reached that debt ceiling. In fact, remember, we've been in extraordinary measures for a month now.
Yeah, how extraordinary has it been? Yeah.
Well, it's been interesting because you've seen that investments to retirement programs haven't been made. That cash has been sitting in accounts to be spent when necessary. That's why the real problem comes in October is because we see that payment on October 1st to the Department of Defense for its fourth quarter. essentially the funding for the fourth quarter of the fiscal year. You yeah. see Social Security checks getting paid out. You see all the Medicare, Medicaid yeah. stuff getting paid yeah. out.
But what I want to do is, like, I want to talk about this movie that we've seen a million times that we saw in 2011, which is yeah. The government's going to shut down, I think, on, because it's saying, like, I'm reading this article shut down from Reuters. Well, hold on. Really? You think so? Do you really think it's going to shut down on Friday?
It will shut down on Friday if there is no continuing resolution to fund its operations.
Okay, yeah.
It's only funded through September 30th.
And I'm reading this Reuters article that's saying the Congress has until September 30th to avert the start of a shutdown of right. government services. But we've been in this situation before, and, you know, every quote-unquote expert, right, bunny ears like crazy right now, that was on CNBC this morning, they pretty much said, we've seen this movie a million times. Like, the government desperately wants to avoid a shutdown in this case, because this is a monumental issue.
Yeah, say that this would be bad timing is an understatement, I would say. Yeah.
So I want to look at things from the Republican side, and mm-hmm. I don't agree with the Republicans here. I'll say that much. But I want to look at things from their perspective, because I do see that this is political warfare, and the Democrats pretty much run all three branches of the government. And
no.
The Republicans yeah, just like
there are five or six conservative justices on the Supreme
okay,
Court.
We don't
control the judiciary at all.
Okay, sorry. So the Democrats don't control that. But I take that back. You're right. Okay.
So you're saying
the two houses, right? So the spending plan. That's what I mean. So the two houses, and then of course the White House, right? So if they want the spending plan to go through with the $3.5 trillion spending plan, they don't need a Republican mm-hmm. vote. So, you know, they could push that through. And I think this is kind of like Republicans' Hail Mary, saying like, look,
it's an interesting hill to fight on.
That's kind of my perspective for the Republicans, is just, you know, look, we're in a lot of debt already. Secondly, the Democrats, if they have it their way, they're going to spend up to about, you know, I've seen figures as high as $6 trillion. I've seen figures as low as $4.5 trillion. But I mean, they're on pace to try and spend around that much money this year, or at least get that much pass for spending over the course of the next 10 years,
sure.
which is a lot of money.
I mean, again,
and they can get it done without any Republicans. They don't need, like, they can have all the Republican opposition in the world and they can still get it
they
done.
They can so, theoretically get it done this time. But never again after this. So the method you're talking about is through reconciliation. So there is currently an infrastructure.
Okay, so they can get it through reconciliation, exactly.
Which, for those of you wondering what reconciliation is, yes. it's when the House and the Senate pass bills, they usually pass bills that are different. Or the House will pass one version, the Senate will pick it up and pass a different version. The Senate will do it. Usually it starts in the House, but it doesn't have to. So what happens in the end is you have two bills that are supposed to be essentially the same thing, but they are all going to start out a little bit different. Uh-huh. So when they've passed both houses with the 60 votes needed in the Senate and it's a simple majority in the House, you need 60 in the Senate.
Right.
So yeah.
For reconciliation you do? Or
for the first passage.
Oh, gotcha.
Reconciliation is second. Yeah. So reconciliation comes after this.
Yeah.
So you need, so to pass a standard bill in the Senate, you need 60 votes. Mm-hmm. Pass a standard bill in the House, you need 200 and it's 218. You need more than half. You just need simple majority in the House. You need 3/5 in the Senate.
Yeah.
Once that's passed and you have two versions of the same bill, essentially, what you can do then is you can go in, you can insert something new into the bill, i.e. a debt ceiling raise.
Yeah.
And then you put it to vote. And then through the reconciliation process, the two laws need to become exactly the same. The House's version and the Senate. And then they get sent back to their houses to be voted on. House still needs to be simple majority. The Senate now on this point only needs simple majority as well.
So that's what I'm saying, is like they don't need any Republican support. You know
to
what
do
I mean?
This, correct.
Yeah.
But remember, the Republicans and Mitch McConnell has said, we will not vote for a debt ceiling raise. We will not vote for this, this, or this. And they then say, we also want you to split all this up and vote on it all separately. And it's like, well, you've told us what you're going to do about these things. So I've got some bad news, Mitch. You did tell us your plan. So no, we're not going to do that.
This is my perspective, and my views on this.
I do.
You know my political views as well. But the government spending is out of control. And I think you're absolutely right when there's a Democratic leader. Granted, Democrats generally spend more. It's not like end all be all, but generally they spend more. Obviously,
I would say that's not been true in the last 20 years. But
in the last 20 years, but like and it's unfair to say because of economic events and all that kind of stuff. So I'll say that that's an unfair statement. But generally speaking, over time, Democrats do spend more. Okay. And I'm acknowledging that that was an unfair statement. Okay, so just chill.
Okay,
just have your eyes scotch and chill.
I'm just pointing out for the last 20 years that has not been the case.
Yeah, but okay, but 20 years, like how many presidents have we had in the last 20 years? Exactly. So it's a very small sample size.
Two Democrats and two Republicans.
Exactly. That's a very small sample size.
What I will say is this, and then we can move on. In your lifetime, your statement has not held to be completely true.
Okay, fine. Fair enough. Okay, but I have read a history book in my life. So that's sure. Also, like I said, it's also unfair because, I mean, FDR, I mean, God, that guy spent a lot of money. So
He had 16 years, 15 years
as president. And he had the Great Depression.
15 years.
And he had the Great Depression and a world war. Yeah. So you're going to spend a lot of money. So that's why I'm saying that was an unfair statement, but it's for the most part pretty true. Anyways, yes, what you're saying is absolutely right. Republicans do like to go after Democrats and say, like, you guys got to get spending under control. And then when Republicans go in there, they spend a lot of money.
And then when they're out, they suddenly go, it's like, debt, who did that? It's very well, much.
I mean, but right now, like, the Democrats are trying to spend, like, you know, let's just say $4 to $6 trillion this year, or at least pass that much in spending this year. Because there's no way we're going to spend all that this year. But and the Republicans are just like, whoa, 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 we got to get spending under control. And normally speaking, I'd be like, well, I mean, but you guys spent a lot of money, which the Republicans did when Trump was in office. We spent a ton of money. But this might be the biggest spending plan I've ever seen, or the country has ever seen, or at least since 1933. It's got to be
the biggest single.
Even percentage of GDP wise, I mean, it's a massive, massive spending plan.
It absolutely is.
And this is coming at a time where inflation is, I mean, prices for everything are through the roof.
Are up.
This whole inflation is transitory thing. I think everybody's calling Jerome Powell's bluff because he keeps moving up his timeline as to when he's going to start tapering, right?
They need to start.
So they need to start. So I think this is coming at a time where the Republicans are really just trying to throw a Hail Mary because, you know, most Republicans are not a fan of this $3.5 trillion spending plan. That $1.5 trillion spending plan was quote unquote bipartisan.
This was an interesting thing I was looking at, and it was apparent it was Liz Cheney. So
okay,
but she was talking to someone. I think she was on Meet the Press, and they asked her. They said, "Well, has anyone else, have any of your other Republican colleagues come up to you and said like, good job standing up for your convictions? You know, good job."
What did she say?
She said, "Yeah, a lot of apparently very quietly, there are a lot of Republicans in Congress who are looking at political reality and economic reality, and they know they have to do something." But the problem is they won't defy leadership and just go do it.
Yeah.
And they're holding the line with leadership whose interests I do not see how the Senate's blocking of both the government's funding to get us through December. I mean, I don't understand the point of a 2-month bill either. It's a continuing resolution to fund the government.
Right.
Just come up with a year at a time. It's not, I mean, I know it's harder than I'm going to make this sound, but 2 months, are you kidding? You want to do this again in 2 months?
Yeah. So
right before Christmas again, you know, like you did 4 years ago when a huge number of federal employees
were not paid. Was it 2018?
It was three.
Trump was president at the time, but it was three years ago.
I was going to say four because by the time this one I think actually kicks off, it'll have been December. Yeah, it'll be three.
Right, yeah.
But it's still one of those things where it's like, you want to do this again? You want to have a huge number of federal employees not getting paid through the holidays? They aren't millionaires like you guys.
Yeah, unlike the Congress, who
automatically get their pay.
No matter what.
So if they shut down, when they reopen, you get your back pay. But every other federal employee, Congress has to vote on whether or not they'll give it to them.
Which is ridiculous.
And some of them, they tell them they have to report to work. It's madness.
So this is my view. I get where the Republicans are coming from. The Republicans have outright said, I mean, not Mitch McConnell, but actually, no, even Mitch McConnell has come out and said, like, the U.S. is not going to default. That'd be more catastrophic than anything in the world. You know, they want to make sure that they can pay the par value of the loan when the bonds become due and, you know, whenever they become due. Yeah. And they want to make sure that everybody gets paid. So my view is, like, I understand where the Republicans are coming from because they don't want, like, everybody's on the same page in terms of making sure that the government actually doesn't default on loans. But where they're coming from is just, you know, it's political warfare.
They're playing politics. Let's
of course, but so the Democrats.
When the U.S. in 2011, when the I don't know, coming up with a budget plan saying raise the debt ceiling, and the Republicans going, we're not going to raise the debt ceiling, we just won't help you. That's not the Democrats. That's not the Democrats playing a political game. That's them going, you want to help us do something about this? And the Republicans going, nah. So that's not political.
My thing is, I think the Democrats are trying to bake in so many, they're trying to bake in that spending plan. They're trying to bake in their tax plan and whatever social policies that they want to impose.
And I would argue, I agree, but they also probably realize they're only going to get one shot, because the next time around, they're not going to have a infrastructure bill that's already in place and voted on that they can pass through reconciliation if they have to. So this is very much like a, you can help us or not. And if you're not going to help us, fine, then we'll do everything in one go. And we'll see how people like it.
Yeah. So
it does seem, if you look at a lot of the polling, now polling isn't always the most accurate thing.
Of course.
The majority of Americans support a great deal of what the Democratic infrastructure bill contains and what it's trying to do.
I understand that. But like there's so much waste and there's so much Democratic agenda in the bill.
Sure.
Like, it's an insane amount.
Well, I agree with you. But if the Republicans actually would come to the table and work over the next 4 years to do this incrementally in a real way, in a good faith. It wouldn't have to be this way.
Well, I mean, it's very much a game of he said, she said, because the Republicans are saying, like, hey, if the Democrats just want to talk and work out a bill, and the Democrats are saying, well, if the Republicans want to talk and work out a bill, I mean, that's literally like, I'm watching these speeches, and they're both saying the same exact thing, but they're pointing the finger at the other side.
But the reason, and you're absolutely right, there's too much spending, there's too much in it.
Inflation's going to run rampant, so.
Sure, but here's what I'll tell you. I'll tell you why it's 3.5. I'll tell you exactly why it's too much. We agree that it's too big. We agree that it's too much at one time. We agree that it's going to have some pretty serious knock-on effects. But the reason it is because after 2008, the stimulus was too small.
Yeah.
And so the Democrats have learned. They learned that, well, we had a serious problem. The Republicans helped us a little bit.
I still feel like, and I understand that that study that said that, you know, the size of the stimulus back in 2008 was too small, and it really slowed down
the recovery. The recovery for the average person. The wealthy were fine when the market went back to where it was.
I mean, but
the economy was problematic.
Exactly. So in this case, like, you know, I think the Republicans, you know, Republicans are for the most part very small government people, right? They're, you know, whenever there's big government dependence, big government, any regulation into your life, they claim to be.
Well,
right?
except for when they really like to invade your personal life.
Well.
Boy, are they worried about who's married to who
doctor. The same could be said about the Democrats and what you're allowed to say and all that kind of stuff.
I don't know.
I don't know either. So, okay, so let's call it even. But let's just say this. So, like, the Republicans are just coming from this point where, like, this might increase too much government dependence. So let's try and slow it down. Let's try to use our political forces to kind of lever against that. But like I said, I think what's going to happen is we're going to realize that defaulting is going to be worse than, you know, than not.
The real problem is that they haven't realized that already. That kind of upsets me.
I agree with the Republicans when they say we need to get our spending under control. And if you take that statement as like black and white, it's so true, you know. But it's not as black and white as they say it.
No, it isn't. So to me, it's the analogy right now is you're in the town during the drought. We need to get our water use under control.
Yeah.
But to be fair, half the city, you know, a few buildings are on fire, so we should probably ignore water restrictions, put out the fire.
Right. So that's what I'm trying to say. That's a great analogy. And I'm going to have a drink to that right now.
And now I agree. And now here's where I'll agree with you, Aaron. Once the fire's out and you know it's out, you can stop hosing the building down.
Well, because that's what I'm trying to get around to, James, is they
no,
need
No, I know.
To,
I'm like, saying I agree with you. Okay. The, I'm saying they I need agree
to get,
with you.
Okay. They need to get the spending under control. And that's what the Republicans are arguing, that that's what their stance is. And the Democrats are saying our only stance is we need to get spending under control. And the Democrats are saying our only stance is we can't default on loans. So they're both not so black and white. They're both very disingenuous. So
at best, they are both disingenuous.
Okay, thank you. That's what I'm trying to get at. So
cheers to that.
Cheers, James. Thank you. We landed on the same page somehow, even though you and I are completely opposite sides of the political spectrum. But regardless, here we are, same page, having a drink together. Civilly. But yeah, you know, like we said, we've seen this movie a million times. I would like for the government to get their spending under control, but I'd rather us take care of this, like you said, take care of the fire
for a minute,
forget about the water restrictions,
and then reassess with what we have to do after when things aren't,
things are better. You and I, like, I don't think this $3.5 trillion spending plan is a good idea. The $1.2 trillion one, I don't mind as much.
Either. I think they're both
coming at a really bad time.
I think 3.5 is too high. I think 1.2 is too low. I think you probably, for me, somewhere between 2.3 and 2.5 is probably the correct point.
Yeah, but I'm also because I totally agree that like our infrastructure, we're way behind because COVID sped everything up. Yeah, I mean it needs to be done because COVID. First of all, COVID sped everything up.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like I mean, I think everyone got 3 years older last year. I think the world got 3 years older last year.
At least.
Yeah. I think the world got 3 years older as well because, I mean, look how much technology has advanced and look how much our dependence on technology has increased.
Oh, yeah.
Not to mention like how globalized we are now too. So we've been globalized before, but I mean, that really accelerated through the pandemic. So because of that, we need to improve our infrastructure to accommodate to what has happened, the changes that have taken place in the last year. So we need to spend money to do that. I totally understand that. But this is pretty excessive. So I don't disagree with the Republicans inherently, but like I said, I'd rather us not just default. That would be more catastrophic than anything in the world.
I need us right now not to I need us never to default. We also need to get our spending under control. Now, one of those things is a very serious problem in the next 30 days.
Yeah.
And the other one is more of an aspirational goal.
And I would like taxes not to increase insanely, but I think certain levels of tax, right? I get it. Higher corporate taxes, I don't love high corporate taxes, but if corporate taxes were to increase, and first of all, if corporate taxes were bracketed out, so that small business,
because I agree, because
wage inflation is
the number one,
is so
number
apparent one right now.
Yeah, because it's huge. So yeah, I agree that you have to have. I think you do have to bracket small business versus big business,
you have to
be able to look at the big businesses and go, look, you're big now. You have. You have all of these other loan and other
investment access to capital.
Yeah, you have all these capital portals. Mm-hmm. You don't need this. And then if when they respond like, oh, well, why should we pay you all these taxes? Why don't we just, well, fine, pay your employees more. That's a tax deductible expense. That's a tax deductible expense. Build another thing. That's a tax deductible expense. And it employs the people who are building it. So it's very much
so. I'm all for that. Or if they they help someone pay off student loans, isn't that tax deductible too? If they help an employee pay off student loans?
Can be, yes.
See? So, I mean, it encourages companies to do that, but at the same time, wage inflation. Local businesses like, your mom, pa, retail store, they have to compete with Amazon. Amazon can pay employees very well, much better than a local retail store can, or whatever it is, right? Sports clubs can probably pay their barbers a little bit more than Main Street Barber.
A big corporate shop is going to beat out the smaller guy. That's
wage inflation right there.
So. That's not every case. That's also an economy of scale question of essentially,
right.
That monopoly model, which is I can operate at a loss long enough to run you out of business.
Yeah, but at the same time, bigger companies have the means to include benefits for their employees and things like
and
that.
Should, so in a way that is usually unaffordable for a smaller business.
So, I mean, but when it comes to, this is a long way of me saying, when it comes to taxation, I'm not a high tax guy. You know me, I'm very much not a high tax guy. And, with the passage of these plans, that's what's going to take. In order to actually finance for these, either, our spending will just be out of control and we'll just keep issuing new debt, or tax will go up, or a combination
of
the two.
To be fair, just continuing to issue debt, that's kind of an underpinning of modern monetary theory, if you really look at it. This is the idea that that's actually not the problem that classical economics suggests that it is.
I mean, there's nothing wrong with doing that anymore.
Yeah.
So
now I don't know if I agree with that. But there are,
I don't agree with modern monetary theory as well, but it's just the way it is now.
Apparently some people do, and they have a louder voice than us.
Exactly. And guess what? Bitcoin doesn't necessarily fix this. So.
Oh, no.
Bitcoin fixes this. That's the hashtag on Twitter now, right? I don't know. Whatever. speaking of Twitter, you can find us on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook at Junkonomical. Drunkunomical. Weird way for me to wrap up because
we've gone a little longer than we planned.
Yeah. I mean, we had a great discussion. I think we did. Hopefully you think we did too. Hopefully the drink that you poured for yourself was delicious. Hopefully you didn't finish it all too soon because of all the analogies we made throughout the episode.
Yeah.
Presentation.
Hopefully next week when we get back, together, hopefully the VIX is under 18. So yeah. I can go back to being less gracious and we could look at what happened, whether the government's still open. Who knows?
Yeah.
Did they raise the debt ceiling? Also up for grabs. And then what are markets going to look like? Because I'll be honest, I think that if there isn't spending or if there's uncertainty about what's going to happen or what route the Democrats are going to choose to get this dealt with, I think you start to see markets react in a very negative fashion starting on Friday.
Well, to be honest with you, I think the markets don't really care that much. That's just my opinion.
So I do. And for me, the reason I think they do is because once you're on October 1st and the government's shut down, here's the first thing. You look at this and you say, okay, the military is getting paid, Social Security is getting paid. If the government runs out of money before the 15th, before the middle of the month, suddenly they're not.
Yeah. So far the markets have not priced that in. And I don't think that's actually going to happen.
Well, it's because,
like I said, we've seen this movie before.
I think the markets.
Every time it's always right up to the deadline and then boom, we're okay.
But here's the other
everybody
problem.
Hates each other and everybody hates the deal that they put out. And that's what I think is going
to
happen.
Now, in 2011, the U.S. credit rating was downgraded from AAA to AA+. Just because of how, I think we're going to see a credit downgrade again.
It's going to happen today.
Thursday, Friday, we'll see a credit downgrade if there's no movement.
Well, you know what they say, man.
Live hard, die young, leave a good looking corpse.
Yeah. You know, it's kind of like, I was going to say if the shoe fits, but that kind of reminds me. Either way, it still brings me to that scene in Inglourious Basterds. Terrible scene. But, you know, if the shoe fits, man.
Yeah.
Anyways, gosh, what a morbid way to end this episode.
Yeah, it's one way to go out.
Yeah, no, really. Yeah, seriously. I mean, if you haven't seen Inglourious Basterds, watch the movie. It's amazing. It's Tarantino. I think it might be his best. If you see Reservoir Dogs, I'm not going to argue with you. But wrapping it up, at Junkonomical, DRUNKUMICL, like I mentioned earlier, find us there. Twitter, Facebook, Instagram.
Find the invite to the Discord. Join us in here.
Boom.
It's good to see the conversations that are happening in here. And I'm having a great time with them.
Yeah, no,
I
seriously.
You guys are having a great time with us.
Yeah,
so.
I love your guys' conversation. Love your guys' engagement.
And then
merch. I've got some shirt buyers this week.
We did. Nice. So for the rest of you who may or may not have remembered where this is, drunkonomics.myspreadshop.com.
That's what it
and
is.
And
okay,
you can join us there.
Glad you know.
You can get in there. And you too can get some
nice
hoodies like some of the guys did this week. And you can look just as cool as us.
And the guys that got them. So.
Exactly.
And it looks
what
good.
I will say is like, and it's just kind of on a list of this, I am planning on heading to DC in a few weeks. So if anyone's going to be there,
Hit
us up.
Yeah.
Hopefully the government hasn't shut down and the world isn't burning down. If that's the case, I probably won't go to DC. But look forward to a photo of me in a Drunkonomics hoodie on the steps of the Treasury building.
Yeah. That better happen.
If you're in DC on the weekend of the 22nd of October and you see a guy wandering around in a Drunkonomics hoodie, it's probably
like,
me.
And you're like, wow, this guy is insanely gracious because at that time the VIX would be at 45. I mean,
it absolutely would. Yeah, if the market's shut down and I have no, and if the government closes down and the Smithsonian's aren't open, I'm not going to know what to do other than drink. So,
yeah. Wow, you're like gracious in advance already. I want to buy like graciousness futures. But I know, seriously, right? But with that said, last but not least, Patreon, patreon.com/truckonomics. If you
help us keep our ice frozen and our liquor cabinet stocked, that's a way to do it.
Cold.
If you've already got too much Drunkonomics merch and you don't want to have just excess laying around the house, feel free to join us there.
Yeah, we would really appreciate it.
We absolutely do.
And with that said, I hope you filled and killed. Wait, I haven't killed yet. Let me kill real quick.
Yeah, that's playing chess, not checkers right there, my man.
There we go. Yes, it is. Not bragging, just saying. Just saying, man.
All right.
And last but not least, seriously, for the remainder of this week, unlike the federal government, for the love of God, please, just...
You got to keep it drunkonomical, guys.
Cheers,
man. I guess
we
could really hope the government does too, but...
I know, but I don't really want to cheers to them. So cheers to us and all you conaholics and drinkonomists out there.
A Huda Media Production.